Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 2nd of December. All things political is what you always hear Mondays at 1 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. And one of the finest political minds in the state, Bill Krause, is our guest this hour. He's done so much. He was the campaign manager for the successful gubernatorial bid for Lee Sherman Dreyfus some years ago and became communications director for that governor in our state. He is also chair of the Common Cause in Wisconsin. He is a political junkie and a pundit, and he's with us this hour to talk about all kinds of issues. We'll look at some national issues. Of course, today all the press is reporting on whether or not the healthcare government site is working. It seems to be working much better now, but how significant are the back-end system problems delivering the consumer information to insurers? We'll look at the second John Doe investigation in the state of Wisconsin, looking at campaign irregularities. Is there a possibility, Bill wrote a couple of months ago, that Scott Walker may not run for re-election? Does he still think that may be the case? Congress has been criticized for having the most unproductive session in history, and the federal trial on Wisconsin's 2011 voter ID law may help define the future of the Voting Rights Act. Those are just a few of our issues this hour. Here's how you reach us. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And you can also reach us on Twitter if you would like, at K Dunn Show. Bill Krause, thank you, sir, so much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, Kathleen. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, and we have so much to talk about. I love having you on today because there's a lot of state news for us to explore, too. But let's start with this healthcare.gov site. It seems to be working a little bit better today, but we hear that there are all kinds of back-end system problems that are going to be with us in the not-too-distant future. Still big problems ahead?
Oh, probably, because this is a sort of a lesson to everybody who isn't in the high-tech business to know how unreliable high-tech is and how complicated it is. And particularly the bigger you get a system this big dealing with issues this complicated, and it is bound to be flaw-ridden, and the promises of success are always overstated. And it's working for every, as it happens, I'm having a problem with a private company that had did a new system, and it's worse than Obamacare. Mm. These things don't work, so these are not automatic.
Mm-hmm.
The code writers are geniuses, of course, but these are really complicated things to do.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that it's having trouble, and I'm not surprised that they're fixing it.
Do you think that that the president was hands-on enough with all of this, Bill, or did he kind of let the ball drop?
Well, I don't. Look at how many hands does the president have? look what he's got to. You take a look at his agenda, and you start with Syria, Iran, Libya. Afghanistan, and then you come home and you hit into health care and you hit into the agenda in the United States is enormous. So to expect him to have his hands on anything this detailed, it's just ridiculous. What he does is he gets the best people he can find and hopes that they do the best job that they can do. And as I say, this is a quagmire. Dealing in high-tech, complicated programs is almost always a try and fail and try again.
Mm-hmm. How long and how fierce will the Republican opposition be to this?
Well, I suppose it'll be very long and very fierce because the issue now is it's anything that they in this partisan world, you never give credit to anybody on the other side for doing anything right or well. And if you've got a wedge on them, you exploit it to the maximum. And the Dems would do the same thing if they could find something with a wedge, and will. So we've gotten so ad hominem. So it's getting personal, and you know, there's a trace of racism available to be looked at in the way people are reacting to other people. It isn't the issue so much as the person with the issue.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking as I speak to you about that successful campaign that you ran for Lee Sherman Dreyfus and how incredibly different things were when it came to being able to talk to each other and getting some work done together. The times are so different, aren't they, Bill?
Aren't they? Yeah, and one of the things that's changed most dramatically that is sort of below the radar is the drop in the power of the influence of the press.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you had the press on your side, you owned the joint. People were afraid of the press. Nobody's afraid of the press anymore.
Mm-hmm. How'd that happen?
That, of course, it happened, and the Internet was a big factor, even though it's overrated as a medium. And the press isn't isn't there anymore. There's no Don Farr. There's no Ken Lampke. There's no your husband, Mike. They're not there. And so when I was in the governor's office, there were 25 print reporters in the Capitol press corps.
Really?
Yep. There were 10 from Milwaukee.
Wow.
And so they set the agenda. They were who we worried about.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't set the agenda anymore, and the present crop are not worried about it. So the question is, who are they worried about? They certainly aren't worried about you and me, which is disappointing. But the grip on the handles of power is tighter than it was 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess they're worried about Kim Kardashian. I don't even know very much about who she is, but it's amazing how much press there is on these people. Who in the world cares about them?
Right.
You know, I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I really don't get it. You wrote a couple months ago on FightingBob.com that there may be a possibility that Scott Walker would not run for re-election. Do you still think that may be true?
Well, Bob Williams and I have long since concluded, and Bill Broidrick and a few others agree with us, that if Walker truly, if his objective is to be president, and if he's going to exercise the objective in 2016, he's got to look at the route to success. And we don't think the route is through Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats still have those million signatures and million email addresses. They're not as mad as they were. But that is an enormous – politics is still less, and that's an enormous advantage. If he wins here, he could win slightly, not like Christie in New Jersey. And what he has got, what he is almost an iconic figure. He's a star in a star system world. And wherever he goes, he draws a crowd. Now, he's talking largely to the choir, but he is a star. And look at all the press he's getting on this book.
I know.
Yeah. So if I were running his campaign to be president, I'd say, okay, let us exploit the positive and sort of get rid of the negative. If he wins, let's mm-hmm. say, the governorship, and even if he wins at 54, to 46. What's he going to do in Wisconsin? Fundamentally, since Act 10, not much has come out of this governorship. And so I don't know that he's got an agenda. I don't know that he's got an agenda that would attract national attention. So I think this is the weakest platform there is. And I would advise him, you want to be president, go on the road, preach, be the Billy Graham of budget balancing, government and union busting, and exploit it.
Why is it? How has he become such a star nationally, Bill?
Well, he did two things that were very hard to do, and nobody did it as publicly as he did. He beat the bully. The public unions had overreached and become bullies. He beat him. And he also balanced a budget that Jim Doyle had 8 years to budget, balance, and didn't do it. Those two things, he's not a one-trick pony, but he's a two-trick pony. And he's very charming, and he's very glib. I'm sure you've seen him. Mm-hmm. He handles himself very well against tough questions and tough questioners. And so he's got a hand that he's playing very well.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about this John Doe probe number two, where there's been some pushback on this from the people who are being investigated, which wasn't the case for the first go around. Do you have a good sense of what they're after and why it is that we're seeing Wall Street Journal editorials and talk show hosts talking about how partisan this is?
It's a mystery to me. Who else? Well, Clinton was under investigation the entire time he was in office, and evidently Walker is going to be too, but I don't see any smoking guns. I don't see anything in the Jensen-Quala league of where you took public employees and put them into campaign actions. I don't see that. Now, maybe people misbehaved, but there's no evidence to me that it was directed from the top. I just think it's a phony issue.
Mm-hmm.
So far, it has produced nothing.
And do you think there is a smidgen of partisanship about this? The Democrats, that's what some are saying, could also be under investigation, couldn't they?
Well, when the last time there was a scandal, the Democrats, everybody went to jail. Everybody but Scott Jensen, who fled to Waukesha. So Scott Quallo went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, the corruption of money and the things that people do to make sure they have enough of it is not partisan. It's universal.
That money thing, really, the money thing. It's just isn't it everywhere? It's just everywhere.
Doesn't it surprise you, you know, with the way the Internet has disrupted everything, marketing and selling and the way we live our lives, it hasn't really touched politics. And it seems to me it is so obvious a way to do politics without money. It's like putting grassroots politics back together again, only in the ether.
Well, the president did some of that. He made good use of
Internet, he made good use of raising money.
Right.
But I'm thinking of obliterating the need for money.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
It would be. I'm for getting rid of it totally, but I don't know what kind of society I would put together.
I keep talking to 25-year-olds and asking them to tell me how to do this.
I know. And then, I'm sorry, Mike Hamm, I know it's a small one, but to make people work on Thanksgiving Day, I'm sorry. What was wrong with America, I was saying?
Right.
What is wrong?
Right.
We can't have this. So if Scott Walker does decide to run again, let's look at Democratic opposition. Do you imagine that Kathleen Vinaut will announce? And what do you think about Burke as a potential challenger to the current governor?
I don't know. The pros and cons of having a primary are about equal. Dreyfus would never never won without the primary.
Mm-hmm.
Neither would Russ Feingold. You know, you can get a boost out of a primary that has become unbeatable. But a primary costs you a lot of money, and it sure killed Tommy.
Right.
So it's not a easy choice. So Kathleen has to make that choice. Mary Burke has no voice in it. So Kathleen may run, and it may be advantageous to both of them. They might have a very friendly primary. You know, Dreyfus at one time and Dave Carley were both running against favorites in 78, and neither favorite would debate them. So they debated each other.
Hmm.
And it worked. It just happened to work beautifully then, but it doesn't always work. So that's up to Kathleen, whether mm-hmm. she thinks she's got the horses to do that.
Hmm.
Well, I think Mary Burke is a gift from heaven.
Really?
To the Democrats.
Hmm. Why? Why do you say that?
Well, she comes out of business.
Mm-hmm.
She's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
She's very smart. She has she was opposed in her election to the school board by the teachers union. So is, she has no obligations in the direction that the poor Kathleen Falk got caught in. She has none. They have no hold on her. So she can decide what she wants to do vis-a-vis the public unions. Kathleen probably can as well. But that could have been a albatross, and with her it isn't.
Well, don't you need, isn't that the base of support, though? One of the bases of support from the Democratic Party, that you need to get all of those people to vote for you, all those teachers.
Who are they? Who else are they going to vote for? Walker?
Probably not.
No.
Most of them wouldn't.
You know, the overplaying to the yellow dogs just seems to me to be such a ridiculous thing to do. They got no place to go. They could stay home. But they're not going to. And so you don't have to. That was Tommy's big mistake. Tommy has ignored the possibilities the moderates were still around, and he won, but he cost him the general election. Mm-hmm. He won at such a terrible price.
And then what happens should the governor decide to really go for the big prize and not run again? What do the Republicans do?
Well, they got look who they got on the bench. They got Van Hollen.
Uh-huh.
The interesting thing about his announcement that he wasn't running, all announcements is you're not doing something are followed by what you are going to do. There's nothing. He didn't say anything. So I don't think he's going to quit at his age, and he's been quite good, and he's been quite popular. So he is either on the bench waiting for Scott to step aside, or he's providing a cleansing gap between now and the next Supreme Court election. I have no idea which it is, but it's very peculiar that he didn't say, I'm going home to be with my family, like Kevin Cebulski did when he had no family.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Bill Krause is our guest for All Things Political today. Chair of Common Cause in Wisconsin, campaign manager for Governor Lee Dreyfus's gubernatorial campaign, and then communications director for that very popular governor. He's been described as one of Wisconsin's sharpest political minds, and he is with us this hour to talk all kinds of politics. Healthcare.gov. Anybody tried to go on the site? Is it working better? Does the administration still face problems in trying to get the insurers and the consumers linked? I understand that website, I've read, I don't know if it's completely true or not, that all those websites have yet to be built, to be constructed. What do you think about this idea that Governor Walker may not run again, that he's grooming himself for a presidential run? Certainly signs, his book is all over, was in a lot of bookstores over the weekend, and his book is all over bookstores and being endorsed by some prominent leaders, Republican leaders. What would that do to a race? Would it behoove him to not run now because he may not win in huge numbers? And what will be his base here in Wisconsin? Will it help him or hinder him to be running for national office? Do you think that what Bill says might be true? He's not running again. We have other issues, of course, to talk about. Congress being completely unproductive. Partisan debates, not only partisan debates in Washington, D.C., but Bill has written extensively about the Wisconsin legislature abandoning partisan floor debates in favor of rule by caucus. We'll talk about that. Voter ID, the New York Times had an interesting piece in the last couple days saying that the federal trial on Wisconsin's 2011 voter ID law may help define the future of the Voting Rights Act. So we'll discuss that and welcome your phone calls, as we always do. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Lines are open for you right now, and we'll start taking your calls in a minute on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill Krause, this hour, All Things Political, 800-486-8655, our number, 800-486-8655. I'm interested in hearing from somebody who may have tried to sign up for the Affordable Care Act in the last couple of days, too, to see if it's indeed going a lot better than it has been. Wayne from Holman is our first caller for you, Bill. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, good to talk to you, Kathleen.
You too, Wayne.
Talked to you for many months, but hey, Mr. Krause, I have a lot of respect for you.
Thank you.
Boy, a tough loss, wasn't it, against the Badgers and Penn State, Kathleen? That hurt. I've never cried so hard. My son was on the bench for those guys, and but that's okay.
That's
he tried,
really,
but it doesn't work all the time. Quick question for Bill. Kathleen, you had a couple guests on a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Kathleen Falk and another lady. And they're pretty much in supportive of the ACA, which is fine. But they said something that kind of contradicts what you said, Bill. I think Kathleen Falk said that President Obama was so upset with the Affordable Care Act rollout that he brought in his A team. And I guess my question is, did we have a bunch of scrubs running this thing or getting it set up? Or I didn't understand that comment that he finally decided to bring in the A-team. Could you explain that to me, Bill?
Well, I have no idea what went on in the bowels of the federal government, but I've seen this phenomenon happen a lot in private business. It keeps happening at the University of Wisconsin as they try to change major systems. And they almost inevitably fail. And then you really don't bring in an A team as if you had a B team on the field. You just bring in somebody new. Because the people who have designed it are trapped in their own designs often. And the typical way you fix things is give somebody who has no commitment to it, no investment in it, and can look at it anew. And that's just simply a management tactic. I don't think it has anything to say about the quality of the people who failed.
The thing about this, though, is that this president knew that this was his signature achievement, and by golly, he needed to get it right because he knew he's been open for criticism. It went to the Supreme Court, for heaven's sake, that you would have thought that they would make sure that this was rolled out successfully.
You would have thought so, but you would have been wrong, and you'd be wrong in so many instances. What you don't do is you don't test. My wife is in the technical kind of business, and she has learned over time what you want to do is make the president fill out the form and say, how did it work?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll find out it didn't work. I don't get it. don't let a technician tell you, see how good this works? Make somebody who is an amateur do it, and they never do it. Nobody ever does it. But if Obama wanted to be sure it worked, he should have tested it. He should have run it.
Yes, right.
And
thanks.
He found out, whoops, this is complicated and confusing.
Right. Thanks, Wayne, for your call. Joy in Madison, hi.
Hi there. I have two things I'd like to hear Bill comment on. My understanding, when you said that Walker balanced the budget, my understanding, I'm no accountant, but what I read in the papers was that the balancing is kind of accounting tricks and was done with borrowed money that we'll be paying back over a long period of time. And secondly, what you were just talking about, the ACA, it seemed to me that the decision, for instance, in Wisconsin to not have local exchanges was made very, very late. So I think it was hard for DOL or whoever's doing it to accommodate and to have to step in and cover all those separate states. Your comments, please.
Yeah. One of the things that I find interesting about what this is proving, of all the compromises made in that enactment of that law to accommodate the people who opposed the idea altogether and to please the powers in place, like the insurance industry, made it harder to do. And they made the structure of the thing and the complication of the design so difficult, it was almost doomed to fail. And then the next question is, okay, having done that, why don't the other people who don't like the Affordable Care Act are the people who don't think it went far enough. Why don't they say, see, this doesn't work. Let's go the whole route.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many wheels spinning in this, and it's so hard to separate fact from fiction and feelings from facts.
And what about her point that the governor really didn't truly balance the budget?
Well, as far as I know, he did. He got rid of whether he balanced it or not, there's always a little monkey business at the end of June. But as far as I can see, he got rid of the structural deficit, which Doyle spent 8 years kicking that can down the road. And I have no idea why he didn't deal with Democrats are not particularly interested in balancing budgets, but it by not being interested in it, they have created a problem that they are going to it's going to hang over them. That people say, well, these people are profligate. Why would I elect them to anything? But as far as I know, and I don't know that much, the structural deficit was gone, and he did it on the backs of a lot of public employees, of course, by making them pay bigger contributions in the labor-intensive areas like education. But he did it. And if he didn't do it, the image is he did it, and the image always counts more than the facts.
Thanks, Joy, for the caller number, and some lines are open if you want to join us. 800-486-8655. Eugene and Viola, hi.
Good afternoon, Kathleen, to your guest. What I was wondering was the nuclear option that Democrats employed in the Senate to appoint judges with just a simple majority, is that going to come back to haunt them? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Gene.
It probably will. Mr. Smith goes to Washington is no longer a heroic figure. And it's just another example to me of people overreaching. You had that power, which was to use to protect minorities against abuse, and they overplayed it. They used it frivolously on things that never should have been used on, and they created a movement against something that they like, and it's gone. Now, whether it'll ever come back is an open question. As much, I go back to the. The overreaching is almost as bad as covering up. They almost always catches up with you. So far, it has not caught up with the leaders of the legislature in Madison, but I think it will. You cannot deny hearings. You cannot abuse your power without kicking in a reaction that'll reverse everything, and that's what they did. They were holding up judicial appointments on petty budgetary, on Malaysia, on foreign policy issues. It was just a total abuse of a privilege, and they lost it. And it's to their discredit that they created a situation where something that has been useful for a very long time is no longer there.
You wrote an interesting piece in FightingBob.com on the legislature. Let's talk a little more about this, abandoning partisan floor debates in favor of rule by caucus. You asked this question, does any member, with the possible exception of Senator Dale Schultz, have a mind of his or her own?
Yeah, that's a good question, isn't it?
It was your question, sir.
Well,
yes, it was.
in your area, I am a very good friend of a very wonderful woman who has been a longtime constituent of and a supporter of Alberta Darling.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, ask Alberta what about this. And she did. And Alberta gave her a non-answer.
Hmm.
So what happened to Alberta? Alberta was one of my heroes 35 years ago. And what happened to Mike Ellis? What happened to the my Sheila Harstorp? Where did they go? Where are they intimidated? Or they're certainly not. They certainly don't believe in becoming lemmings, and the assembly is worse.
So what happened?
What happened? That is the question. I haven't given up on them yet, and I'm always surprised at how docile they have become. And maybe they're in a position where if they don't, they've got limited power, and even that will disappear if they buck the system. And the governor is a passive player. You know, he doesn't have his hands on that legislature. The legislature is a freewheeling, a radical institution, procedurally. It reminds me of Hitler's Germany.
Well, there is something about, and I've noticed this for years now, it's probably a little more true with the Republicans, although the Democrats can be accused of this some, too. You feel like everybody's saying the same thing, that yeah. somebody's passed out some words that you're supposed to use or phrases, yeah. and you hear them over and over and over again, and it points to what you just said. Let's, you know, have people tell you what they think. And maybe it's not exactly what the line is from the party, but it's nuanced. It's a more it's a deeper debate.
Yeah, and when Lee was governor, the assembly was an ideological circus. There were all these free thinkers. They were walking across desks making absurd speeches, but they were alive and well.
Right.
And they weren't coming out of the caucus with a rubber stamp. The debates in the legislature now are all fake. Mm. There are no debates.
Yeah.
It's all settled ahead of time.
Interesting point.
I think it's a terrible thing that they've done, and I think they'll pay for it. And they should.
Dave in Madison, hi.
Good afternoon. Yes, sir. Now, I could go on other cases, but let's just deal with the AFA. Now, how come Sebelius isn't fired? I mean, it seems like it's been 5 years. There's been numerous problems with this administration. And the only people that ever get fired are the ones that bring the problem to light, the whistleblowers. They're the only ones that get fired. But the ones who are in charge of what caused the problem, they're still in office. Why is that? And it's with all administrations, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
I guess I'd have to have a specific example, Kathleen, to be able to respond to that.
Well, I guess you could
just... Not sure what you're talking about.
She should take responsibility for the failure of the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. She should go because of that. Yeah.
She probably will.
Do you think?
Yeah, you know, she's taken a terrific beating. And she has to because she was... It was on her watch, and I don't whether she can survive that or not is really open to question. But she may not want to survive it because you get so tainted, and she may go. She may go.
What's this? I got too many pieces of paper in front of me, which is one of the problems here. This book you wrote about. Tell me about this book. Thinking.
Have you ever read that book?
No, sir. No.
I'll send it. I'll buy it. I'm buying copies for all of my grandchildren. I'll buy one for you.
You will?
Yep.
Thank you. I'll send it back after I've read it, so I don't want people to think I'm just getting a free book here.
Thinking. Well, I'm not trying to bribe you.
Thinking Fast and Slow. Tell me about it.
It is about the way we think, and we don't know the way we think. And there are several. It's a very scholarly book. As a matter of fact, it's not an easy book. It's a very hard read.
Uh-huh.
It's written by a Nobel winner, but he was an economist. Mm. But over the time, he has watched people, our thinking processes, and how we think in ways that are not rational. Mm. And the worst example, well, the sample is we always want to think fast. We've always got a quick answer to everything.
Yes.
And the other thing is once we decide something quickly, then we quit thinking about it. And John Dean was in Madison a month ago talking about Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
The president knew nothing about that break-in. It became a scandal when the story broke, but his hands were not on that process. Nobody in the president's office said, why don't we just fire these people, confess, and go on? Instead, they said, we can cover this up.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody who went to jail for lying in the cover-up.
Right.
So, and he points out that that's one of our weaknesses. We prefer to think fast, and the political ramifications of it are that we don't have to think at all. If I'm a Republican and a Democrat proposes it, I don't have to think. It's no good. I don't. Mm-hmm. We've quit thinking slow, and we've gone with ideological answers and too quick. And we have an opinion on everything,
right?
And it's usually wrong. And we always overvalue causation. A lot of things happen because of dumb luck. And we never take that into account. But the book, it'll drive you crazy, but you'll love it.
Thank you, sir. I'll look forward to reading it, and
sure
I will read it.
You have Casey or somebody give me your mailing address.
All right. We'll do it. All right. We'll take more phone calls in just a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. I shouldn't have given you that. Our lines are filled. But just keep it in your head. You'll get through eventually. Or send an email if you'd like. talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, leave messages there, too, is the Kathleen Dent Show. We always like to know what you're thinking about, what's going on in the world. Bill Krause is our guest. He was campaign manager of Governor Lee Dreyfus's gubernatorial campaign, so I guess you could say he was a guy who was supremely responsible for the election of Governor Dreyfus. He was then communications director for the governor. He is a political junkie, a Wisconsin pundit. He writes for FightingBob.com. You hear him on the air frequently, and he's with us to talk politics, which we always do, Mondays at 1 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls for Bill Krause. Joan in Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding the question posed concerning rule by caucus, my comment is this. Clearly, the Tea Party and the very wealthy Republican political donors are controlling our Wisconsin legislature and governorship. And I do have a quick story, if I'm allowed time. Thank you.
Okay. Bill?
Well, the Tea Party, one of the things that is reasons I criticize Walker for not putting his hands on the legislature, his problem is almost the same problem Boehner has in Washington. Is the Tea Party caucus is a caucus within a caucus, so you really, even though you're in a majority, decisions are being made to cater to a minority. And that's absolutely true. And they are driven more by ideology than by money. But money is in play, and overreaching is in play, and all these things are very disruptive of the system to which very few people are paying attention.
We'd like to hear a story, Joan.
Okay. I have spoken with a number of local legislatures are coming from our area here, and my question to them was, is it true that Scott Walker said to the legislature, if you do not sign this bill, which is now Act 10, it was known as something else earlier, the budget repair bill, he called it. If you do not sign this legislation, we will get the Tea Party to replace all of you that don't sign it. The response by the legislators that are local indicated that is absolutely true. And when those individuals come in the morning, they are told exactly where they are going to go and exactly what they are going to do. And that was my story.
You heard that story, Bill?
I haven't heard that story, and I have no way of knowing whether it's true or not. I know that the pressure was enormous, but I don't think it got to the level of threatening that kind of revenge. But there's something going on. My criticism of Walker is not that he was overbearing, but that he has become too passive, that he is not curtailing the excesses that the legislative leaders are indulging.
Thank you, Joan. And you're talking about which kinds of excesses, Bill?
I'm thinking of, I'll take the specific case, which is the refusal to hold a hearing on gerrymandering.
Hmm.
Totally unacceptable. And he should, the victims of gerrymandering, one of the top victims of gerrymandering, are executives. And Obama's got it in Washington, and Walker had it in Wisconsin when he had a gerrymandered assembly that wouldn't help him with a bill on job creation.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't do anything. He's a hands-off guy.
Let's talk about the New York Times had an interesting editorial a couple days ago on, and it was about Wisconsin, the federal trial on Wisconsin's 2011 voter ID law, which they said may help define the future of the Voting Rights Act. Deliberations are still going on concerning that, and would you agree that the decision could have that large an impact?
It could, because our Voting Rights Act goes almost as far as those in the South went for reasons that were not socially acceptable. It's very strong, and if you had a modest proposal on voter ID, it would pass. Most people don't think there's anything wrong with a more precise identification of voters. Most people also think it's not a problem, but it was a passive problem that became a very incendiary one. And Wisconsin, I think, went way too far, and it may tip the balance back. Mm-hmm. And once again, overreaching always bites.
And if people didn't perceive it as being a very large problem, why do anything?
Well, it's there are things that politicians are paranoid about, and that's one of them. And there's no reason in it. You cannot talk reason to people who say, why not having to show a picture to do this? You have to show a picture to get cigarettes. Well, those cigarettes and voting are quite different.
Yes. Yes, I guess they are.
Objectives. but they're just, don't even talk to them about it. You know, it's like, you probably have subjects with your mother-in-law you don't talk about, and so do I. there's no reason in it. It's just about emotional, they're unpersuadable. They thought fast about it devoting their lives to defending something ridiculous.
Okay. Catherine is next in Madison. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, good afternoon. It kind of disturbs me, since the gentleman on is considered a pundit, that he says, as far as he knows, the budget isn't balanced. That it is balanced, and if not, the perception is what matters. Well, he's fostering the perception that it matters if he's not done further research on it. I mean, it's easy just to say, is walk a budget balance and come up with Forbes magazine, come up with a Journal Centennial article from 2011. So that's disturbing. The second thing is, when we talk about the overreaching at the Capitol, for a long time, the Republicans in the Capitol, the vast majority of them, looks like with the exception of Schultz, have belonged to ALEC. Tommy Thompson said in The Nation magazine, I love ALEC. I go down there, they've exposed me to new ideas, hand me the papers, I change a few things, and then pass it off as my own. So they've been planning for a long time for this to happen. Now, if you have a lot of things that are overreaching, you can't possibly challenge all of them. You can't possibly challenge all of them in the courts, and so things get set in concrete for a long time.
Bill.
Well, ALEC does provide research. One of the things that's changed in Wisconsin that I think for the worse, the legislature used to go to the University of Wisconsin faculty for ideas and research, and now they're going to these outside groups. Mm. The Democrats go to the AFL-CIO. They got their own stuff on the shelf that they'll pull down for you. I think, and she's right, that it's very hard when you're getting hit from every side and stuff that you don't like. But the accumulation of abusing power has always created a counterattack that overwhelms it in this country. And I think that these guys are, as my mother used to say, breeding a scab on their nose.
Thanks, Catherine, for your call. Bob in Princeton, hi.
Hi. I've got a question. Bill talked on a little bit. Bill, what do you think is the future for redistricting, getting the way districts are drawn changed?
Well, so far, I'm going nowhere fast, but we have unanimous press support. That has got to come for something. It is now, people are talking about it. It is on the public agenda. In a campaign for a special election in central Wisconsin, it was one of the short items on the short agenda. Candidates were asked and had to answer that. Up until this moment in time, any candidate asked a redistricting question brushed it aside as being inconsequential. So it's no longer inconsequential. And whether it is being held up by two people, Scott Fitzgerald and Robin Voss. And they are not stupid people, and they are not, and they are going to have to see that something is happening there. And they're holding it up from a hearing because it's indefensible. You cannot defend gerrymandering. And the big mistake they made was making a map where a little finger goes up out of the third district, picks out Portage County and Southwood County, and drags it back to the third district. So Ron Kind is safer, and Sean Duffy is safer. And the picture is registering. So I think, and I think Mike Ellis will come through in January. He promised Dave Martin and I he would, and I have no reason to think that Mike Ellis will turn on us, and he has got his hands on the levers of power. So I'm not sanguine, but I'm not pessimistic.
Thank you, Bob, for the call. Time for maybe one or two quicker calls. Mike in Green Bay, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. There are so many issues at play here. I look at the ideological break as essentially two moral issues. One side fully believing that they have the moral right and authority to keep whatever they have. The other side believing that society has a right to promote things that are good for society. This is, I don't know if your guest today understands what I'm getting at. I'd certainly like to discuss more. I know we're limited on time.
The fundamental difference between Republicans and Democrats, and my history is, Republicans are baffled by people who pass up opportunities. And from there, it's a quick shift to the dependency democracy. Democrats, on the other hand, feel it is their fault that people pass up opportunities or don't succeed. So you got the guilt on one side and the resentment on the other. And I don't think those are reconcilable. But that gives you a choice when you're choosing parties, because that they will go in those directions absolutely predictably. When you get below that to whether who's moral and who's wrong and who's destroying democracy and who's building democracy and who's saving the country and who's ruining the country, it gets a lot more specific. But fundamentally, those are the mindsets of the people who sort generally into those two camps.
Thanks, Mike. Bill, we're out of time. Thank you, sir, so much for being with us.
Okay, always a pleasure.
Thanks,
Catherine.
Bill. Bill Krause, chair of Common Cause in Milwaukee, political pundit, campaign manager for Governor Lee Sherman Dreyfus's gubernatorial campaign, and then communications director for that governor.